I'm going to open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Today is April 30th, 2009. And before I get started on our informational meeting, I want to read a letter a statement from myself, but I want to read it because I want to make sure I say this correctly. Two hearings ago, when we had a public hearing on the greatest permanent value bill, there were a number of people who came forward and talked, and we were so late the other night that I decided not to make these comments now, but I just wanted to put on the record that, you know, in this, we have some controversial topics in this committee, not a lot, but some, and I think we all believe firmly in the sanctity of the process, and that we've tried to treat others here, you know, on various natural resource issues where they differ from ours, opinions differ with respect and dignity, and it's imperative that all people who come in front of this committee and this legislature be heard in an attempt to secure the best future we can. And while I appreciate the public process that allows the public to speak its mind without restriction, I believe we have a responsibility to right any wrongs that occur in our company during our committee hearings, and so I intend to exercise that responsibility now. During the public comment on House Bill 3072, an allegation was made that Hampton Lumber was stealing logs from the state forests. And that's a very serious allegation, one that I decided to pursue to determine whether or not the history revealed even an ounce of merit in that particular allegation. It does not. I can unequivocally say that Hampton has a clean contracting record with the state of Oregon and that there are significant safeguards in place, both within the company and the Department of Forestry, to make sure that all logs are properly accounted for and that Oregon is paid at the appropriate rate. I believe it's unfortunate that completely legal activities undertaken by companies like Hampton and individuals of integrity and good character were misconstrued quite maliciously by a witness in this particular forum. It's perfectly acceptable for an individual to disagree with the legal process of harvesting trees on state lands and how many and how, but not appropriate in my view for that individual to compare that activity to the criminal activity of stealing logs. I believe that the vast majority of companies and individuals that contract with the state of Oregon do so with goodwill and the best of intentions. Safeguards exist to catch honest mistakes, which happen in all endeavors, and significant procedural steps exist to dissuade, reveal, and ultimately punish any of those who choose to break the rules. Thank you for your attention, and I hope we do not have to deal with this type of thing again.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Krieger.
In the past, we actually have had chairs that swore people in because it is a violation to sit up there and lie to us. And I think we need to look at that very, very carefully because I've actually seen it happen. You know, you write down the comments here. Maybe some individual here has firsthand absolute information that they know what's being said is inaccurate and is a lie. And we can't make good policy when we don't have good information. And try to sway this body towards your particular point with a lie is not appropriate.
I agree. I actually asked somebody, I don't remember if it was legislative council or somebody, whether I could drop a priority bill to have the whole swearing in, you know, like Congress does, and make it an actual crime to lie to the legislature. And forget if it was our free speech clause or something that was cited as not clear whether it would be constitutional or not. But it's good advice.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Shoffler.
Yeah, I don't know about all the swearing in and all that constitutional stuff, but I think when we find out people are liars, we need to inform everyone from the mountaintop that those individuals and groups lied right in front of us.
He's not talking about you.
That's what I, and discredit them throughout this building and this state. Thank you.
I'm going to just stick with my letter, but
I have one thing to add to that.
Representative Van Horn.
Well, that particular reporter also reported that Commissioner Josie had said that there had not been a sale in a year in the Tillamook Forest, and I do believe it was me that said Hood River County had not had a sale in the past year.
Okay,
but
with that, let's talk about wolves. We've got, so I got an email from a family that was represented here today about the wolf attack that was on their property on Good Friday, and they had asked for a chance to talk about it. We were sort of past our committee deadlines, and I knew we had to get through all of our bills, so I scheduled it for the first one that was available past our committee deadline, which is today. And so I wanted to have them and other folks who are interested in talking about this issue come and talk to us about what they experienced and sort of tell their story about what happened, and then we can ask questions, get information about the state of the law in Oregon. The department's here to answer questions if they would like. But with that said, I would like to invite Curtis Jacobs, and I've got Tickmore, Barry Bashu, and I don't know what order you want to come in, but I would prefer to have Curtis Jacobs, since it's his property and his sheep, come up immediately. Cliff, did you want to join? Yeah, why don't you two come up, and we'll start with the property owner and his representative. That's a good way to begin. And then we've got three or four other folks that can talk after them. Welcome to the Ag Committee.
Thank you, Chair Clem. Cliff Benz, Representative District 60, here today on behalf of many of my constituents who are concerned about this issue. And I want to begin by thanking you for, first of all, the time you took in trying to schedule my bill 3383. And we much appreciated the cattlemen and I your attempts to find time for a bill which you knew was going to face a difficult challenge. We appreciate that effort. And we very much appreciate today's hearing to share with you our concerns about the wolf issue. Growing up on a ranch in eastern Oregon, I became extremely familiar with the need to be able to protect our property from wildlife. And even as a little kid growing up on the White Horse Ranch down near McDermott, we found out quickly how dangerous. Back then it was coyotes. Now, of course, coyote looks kind of small compared to a wolf. It's interesting now, after all these years have passed, to see this intersection of policy that is trying to protect wolves, an endangered species, on the one hand, and then all of our hard-fought, grinded out of the dirt economic efforts in eastern Oregon from depredation. It's an amazing, real intersection of policy and the reality of trying to make a living. And I would say that the challenge for all of us is that have grown up out there trying to defend what we're trying so hard to create, to sit back and watch those protected species kill livestock. It's a really difficult thing. So we welcome the opportunity today to share with you that challenge and ask for whatever help you might be able to give us. Now, it would be easy for us to look forward to maybe 10 years from now as the wolves make their way across Oregon, as they will. And that issue will become much more real as folks here in this valley and over on the Coast Range enjoy the presence of the wolf and the consequences that go with it. And so I would simply say that what we see today and the pictures that you will review reflect what's going to happen next in a very modest scale. And the thought, and I'll leave it to those who were actually suffered through this to explain it more clearly, but the thought that money can replace these animals is incorrect. You know, what's really going on is the same thing that folks are suffering when they face this liquid natural gas line. What they face is the inability to defend appropriately what is theirs. And that is that feeling of hopelessness and that feeling of powerlessness is what you're going to hear today. Because if you're watching your property being destroyed or taken and you can't do a thing about it, that's not the way it should be. But I know our challenge as representatives is to try to address that issue as best we can. And we really appreciate you taking the time to hear us today.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Shuffler.
Is the representative going to be with us for a while, or are you going to leave?
Representative Shuffler, I'm going to leave. I'm supposed to be in revenue.
Okay. Then before he goes, may I?
Please.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing this forward. And I think there is a nexus between the property arguments. although you know where I'm at on LNG. On this right here, though, there have been many of us, regardless of party affiliation, that have fought hard to protect the property rights of people out there relating to livestock and pets, and by, quite frankly, eventually their families due to the exposure of some animals, bear, cougar, for example, and our inability to hunt them with dogs. I think we can coexist with these animals. I'm confident we can. That all being said, if someone comes into my home uninvited, they will be dispatched accordingly by me if I'm home. Period. They will be an imminent threat to my family and myself, and that's exactly how I'll react. If I were so blessed to be a cattle rancher, and there was an imminent threat to my property, my livestock, my pets, my family, I would do the same. And I don't think I should be branded as a criminal for doing that. And that's the problem. And unfortunately, the majority population lives in a concrete jungle, and they seem to think it's fine to lord over those out there that may feel hopeless and helpless and not having control of their property. Personally, I don't believe it is true. I think we can make it so they can control their property. Currently, they can't when it comes to wolves, cougar, and bear. I won't even go into the LNG, but I really want to thank you for bringing this forward. I hope someday we restore common sense to how we manage these critters. And just for the record, I'd like to say any pinniped east of the Astoria Bridge should be allowed to be taken as well.
I'm glad we got that in the record. Representative Roblin.
Thank you. I also wanted to say thank you. I have, in my three sessions here, I was concerned I wasn't going to get to do wolves this session, so I'm pleased that we're back. It has been in each of the sessions, and I believe that we need to figure out rational rules to allow people to protect their property. The part that I am appreciative that you mentioned, these wolves are Canadian wolves. I mean, it's that they've been reintroduced. They were timber wolves. They really aren't accustomed to your territory as well. And the reality is when they get into the Coast Range in southern Oregon, that's their real habitat. And then we'll start to find. Now, the strange things, the same people who are protecting them, these are canines that attack and tree cougars. They also eat cougars. So it may change the cougar population at some point. But I think that it's probably illegal for them to chase the cougars currently in our state, and I get a little concerned about how that's going to be carried forward in the future. So just wanted to point that out and hope that my friends that stop the dogs from hunting will stand with us to keep these dogs from hunting as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to, with your leave,
deal with the state's revenue problems. Correct. We understand. Welcome.
With that.
My name's Kurt Jacobs. I'm from Baker County, and you can pass that around. This here, first of all, my dad's 89 years old. We've been in the sheep business. He's been in the sheep business for another 80 years. You want to go ahead and put up the... Right.
Cool.
Sorry for the technical.
Can you dim the lights?
Oh, okay. Probably have to turn the lights off. So just see. But anyway, we've been he's been ranching. He's 89 years old. He started out with a bunch of sheep when he was 6 years old. This is our home place. This lot right along there, that tree is one of the pictures of the lambs you'll see later on, but it's this lot right here. You can see the trucks are sitting here. We load them out right here. This is a county road coming into our place. This is where, on April 10th, the morning of, my brother and my nephew that's here went down to get the bunch of sheep that was in this pan to be loaded out to haul to the range land. This is what they found. They didn't find any sheep. The main bunch of sheep had been chased so hard back and forth through this lot, and these are the kills that they saw right here laying in the field. There wasn't any ewes left in this. They'd been put over the fence into this. There's a lot right in here that we use as a kind of a staging area with each bunch that we bring around to the truck. They had been... chased back and forth. They went through the fence. They were laying down over there when I got there, when he called me and said, "You better get down there. We got trouble." They were laying down. We couldn't tell at the time what would had really happened, but we started picking up tracks right in around here. Anyway, this is looking south out of our place. We kind of figure the wolves are either coming around through this sagebrush and coming in, and this is another lot that we have that's on the east side of that particular lot there. This is the flagging or the flaggery or whatever they put up. Tick Moore's place is right in over this ridge here. There's houses all along the backside of this ridge here. We figure they either come down here and come in. The famous rock jack is right there where the camera was. But anyway, as we begin to move them around, we realized that we had more problems. When we did get the sheep up, they were all pushed into this pen here. All the ewes had mixed with another bunch in this pen, this area right here. We found these three more lambs after we got the main bunch up. I called the ODF&W. Brian and Jamie came right out. They were there within 30 minutes to 40 minutes. Brian helped me. He said, let's move these sheep so we can not destroy any tracks in the area. We put them through this fence into this lot on the backside of this fence here. Brian had to pick up a lamb that was laying right here. He was so bad he couldn't walk on his own. He picked him up. He packed him through the fence, and I said, lay him in the shade right there so that we can pick him up later. That afternoon when I went back, he'd already passed away, and we brought him back. And this picture shows him laying right there. I brought him back and laid him in the pen. Anyway, this is a picture of one of the lambs. This is how close it is to the building. This is one of the lambs. There's another one back up in here. These lots, this is our lambing shed right here. We bring them down through. These ewes and lambs are in all of these pens. There's numerous bunches of pens there. But as you can see, it's really close to the proximity of all the buildings. This is the lamb that was the farthest to the south. This is the one that they ate the most of. The other lambs they had, this is the same picture. They basically ate everything, the backbone, but his stomach stomach and his intestines was laying about 10 feet away. They never ate that part of him. This lamb was laying up toward the middle. They basically bit his chest open and took his heart and liver right out of him, and that's all they done to that one. There was another lamb laying about 10 or 12 feet away from this one, and it looks like they started to do the same thing, but all the hide was gone across the chest area. This is either Brian's or Jamie's with ODF. They were the ones that took their Russ's pictures. Anyway, then Russ come that afternoon, set up some cameras, took some of the dead animals and moved them across the fences in four different areas and set up motion cameras. We had moved the sheep all back out of that pen and kept them out of there. So Russ says, get them out of there and we'll use, you know, for that kind of a bait situation. The next pen up is where we got hit. He called me Sunday morning, and I said, well, because it's Easter and it was a quiet night, you don't need to come over. Anyway, he came over Monday morning, looked at the motion cameras. We had some pictures. He and I looked at them. We looked at them quite a bit. Couldn't really determine it. He left. My nephew called me, and he said, we got troubles again in the next pen. And that's when I called Russ. He came right back. This is the lamb that was in the next pen that the wolves had come into, but they had came right through where we had walked the day before in the tracks and in the mud. They had walked right through the buckets we had over the tracks from the day before. Came in, jumped over the fence, come in and killed this lamb. But anyway, there was another lamb laying there. There was two of them. This one, they ate the heart and the liver out. The other lamb, they had bit him so hard that he was paralyzed. He could look at you. He could move his eyes. And there is a picture of him here. This little lamb was one of them that was in the original attack at the beginning. We doctored him for 3 days, but you can see with the extensive marks onto him. His ribs were broken right there where it's the darkest on his rib side. He eventually, we lost him. This lamb is one that I just skinned. This is a replacement ewe lamb that we've saved. He's got the tag in his ear. These are all twin lambs out of twin ewes. And we go through and select our replacement herd out of these. But you can see the intensive deal. If you kind of look, you can see the fang marks right there. This is some more of the tearing and on the sides. This lamb here was the one that was paralyzed on the second attack. Where I'm standing in the back right there is where the lamb had his heart and liver, and this lamb was laying right here where my wife was. This lamb lived for another day and eventually died too. This lamb here was the one of the original beginning attack. His mother is crippled. She has a hard time walking. She's lost one of her other lambs in the first attack. This lamb, you can see the tear marks in his side. We've doctored him with antibiotic. He's, as you can see, he probably will not make much for the year. We're in a natural lamb program where we can't give any antibiotics. If we do, we have to pull them out and put them aside. And so I've got three or four of them lambs that's still alive that's going to be out of that program. The rest of them's all died, and that's the reason we're to 24. This lamb is one of them in the original attack. He's one of them in one of the pictures that we scanned. You can see the tear marks. He died too. You can see the tear marks in there. You can see he's alert, but he can't move. These are the two lambs that was in the famous picture. As you can see the buildings behind up in there. And these lambs, the 12 first ones is in all of this lot right in here. The wolves come in here. As you can see, there's a bucket right there. They came up through the creek and jumped this fence here and got in for the second attack. That's $3,000 or better worth of sheep. That's the lambs that I picked up from Russ's trapping and all the ones that died over the time. U.S. and Fish and Wildlife Service come in. This is putting up the flattery or flagging. It's working so far, I guess. We haven't been back, but we got a phone call the other day. They found tracks coming back to our area again the other night. So this track I took a year ago. I saw the wolf make it. It's about 6 miles above our place. We were up there checking on our irrigation ditch in the snow, and we come around the turn, and this wolf was standing in the road. I just took a shovel and took that out of the snow. But anyway, that's a track from a year ago that we saw the one. This is a track from in the mud along the wet spot of the wolf attack at the ranch. And that's the plaster mold that I sent around this out of that track right there. And that's the famous picture. But anyway, everything's been kind of quiet. We went into the process of moving our ewes and lambs as fast as we could out of this area because we decided it was safer to go to the rangeland and be away from our indoor around our place. We run guard dogs. We have bells on the sheep. The worst of it was our first truckload of ewes went out Thursday morning, and that's four of our guard dogs got on with the first truck to go to the rangeland. And when I got home, I didn't turn out the other two. But we run six dogs a year just for this kind of problems that we're having. We started out with one when we first started about 15 years ago, and we're up to six now just to make it through the year. It's a tough deal. It's getting so we're having to run more dogs to take care of the cougars and the coyotes. But anyway, I want to say that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Russ, has been great to work with. He's done us a good job. Anyway, until we get him caught, well, we won't know what's going to happen. there any questions?
Any questions? Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do they know how many wolves are? Is this a pack, a single? Do you have any idea?
Right now, it's just the two that we know of, or the two that's in the picture anyway. My daughter went to Montana State. She had a professor up there talk to her. He kind of gave us a little scenario of what was going to happen. He says these are two probably young wolves. Chances are the deer and the elk are getting a little more wiser. They're starting to run a little faster. And he says they're out looking for a new food source. He said when you put up the flagging, he said you're not going to have the trouble, but your cow guys around you are. And 3 or 4 days later, Tick had the problem with the calf. I know there's bigger tracks up there. I've seen bigger tracks. I think there's more there. He says it's out there. These two are out of a pack, and they're out searching for new food. So,
thanks.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you. You know, thanks for coming. I appreciate everything you're doing and taking time out of your, I'm sure, busy schedule to come down here and show all this to us. I just don't, the people that want to say, here we have a letter from the good people at Defenders of Wildlife that, you know, these examples are no reason to panic. Well, for them, it's no reason to panic. People are so disconnected from what you do and where their food comes from and how much hard work you put in. I mean, both my grandparents on both sides of my family were dairy farmers. My cousins and uncle are still farmers in Minnesota. Grew up, and people just don't understand how much you all put in to what you do and the life generations of you all out there putting into this. And it's unfortunate, because if they had a clue, they would understand it. It isn't, and I don't see you panicking. I see you reacting, and that's good. But they're just totally disconnected from what's going on, and that's very unfortunate. Have you, in your research and studies and talking to all these folks, I mean, Minnesota and Idaho, they have a whole bunch of wolves, and Maine, I believe, has wolves too, if I'm not wrong. What are they doing there to deal with this, and is there anything there that they're doing that you think we should do that we're not doing?
My daughter has a phone call into another lady, a specialist in Montana, and I'm trying to get a hold of her to see what she has for ideas. Mm-hmm. I know they do some shooting and things like that, but I'm not real sure what. I know they're doing the flagging. They're doing a lot of that kind of stuff. They've got a deal that Russ told me that if they get a caller onto it, it'll set off a siren and stuff like that. I mean, they're all tools, but I think they're going to eventually get used to the flagging, and I think they're going to get used to the siren and still come. Especially with these two young ones, they're not going to give it up. I got to do some more research. I mean, this is new to me. I mean, I've learned more in the last 2 weeks about wolves, and you know, we fought coyotes, and we know what to do with them. We know what to do with a cougar, and now we've got a wolf, so it's a different deal.
And we'll have the department be able to come up and talk about other states' efforts, too.
Thank you.
We've got some more witnesses, too. Representative Van Harmon.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I was curious about the dogs. I've known that dogs are used oftentimes with sheep, and can they use them also for cattle?
Yes, they do. Our dogs work with our cattle. They're okay. Around through them. Yeah, you can.
Okay. Are they effective? Excuse me.
Well,
follow up.
The professor said that the dogs would be fine, but this is the other scenario he gave us. He said, chances are if I'd had my two dogs turned up, they would both be dead. Because he says what happens is they associate those two dogs as another pack. They're either going to kill the food source or the pack.
Okay.
And so I think with the more dogs I run, the little better chance I'm going to have with that kind of a scenario, because they're two, if I got six out there, that's going to be a little different for them.
Okay.
But that's kind of what he said. I think that as near as I kind of gathered and I've heard, chances are the dogs, when they're intimidated by the wolf, and they will be quiet they're scared of the wolf. And that's what I've heard too, that if the wolf comes in, then your dogs will be really quiet. And the night the second attack happened, I was up off and on. Every time the dogs barked, I was standing outside. and somewhere along at 3 o'clock, it happened and I didn't hear it. So I don't know whether they were quiet or what happened in that time frame.
Oh, thank you.
Representative Winkert.
Thank you, sir, for coming today. Can you give me some idea of the losses that you suffered financially? I mean, aside from the incalculable, just give me some idea of what the financial loss to you was, and if there was any compensation, and how much that was.
I've talked to him over the phone. We kind of made an agreement, you know, and discussed the six ewe lambs. The defenders talked to me the other day. They are supposedly sending me a check. But I asked him about all the medicine and the antibiotics that I put in all the lambs and all that stuff, and he said he couldn't do anything for that. The amount of time. I've still got this first bunch of sheep and part of the second one still at home on the ranch, just taking care of them. I've got two ewes that's crippled pretty bad. I've got three lambs that has different spots tore onto them. I got one with a throat that's tore. He'll probably make it through the summer if he's lucky, if the infection doesn't get in his throat. You know, there's a lot of time. I've spent 2 weeks just on this deal, and I'm still not, you know, caught up with my other chores. You know, you got to bring these sheep in. You got to take antibiotic them. We were feeding them some stuff to relax them so they weren't, you know. The ewes, we finally just turned them out in the pasture there and let them just calm down. They were so exhausted that they were just laying down. That's the reason we didn't find them the second day until we started to move them. And then when you got them up, there laid the two lambs. There's quite a bit of time, two or three people and working on to it. I don't know what the money factor would be, but it's antibiotic and giving them shots.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, follow-up.
If you'd be willing to, though, if you could give me some idea of what you would assume that you would be compensated, what would the price be? What would you have put on the price financially on your loss with all the costs and the labor and time that you put into it? And then if you'd also tell me what it was that the defenders actually offered you.
They offered me $125 for the just straight lambs.
What was the total amount they offered you?
I haven't got the total. I've
four. Times 125.
Be six of them at $160, and the rest of them would be at $125. Whatever that totals up to.
$2,500 to $3,000.
I think he mentioned $3,000 earlier.
Yeah.
But what do you think your costs were?
And we probably got, you know, $400 or $500 in just, you know, keeping them back, feeding them hay and antibiotic and the anti, you know, the medicine just to relax them. We probably got $500 with my time and the people that's there working with them.
Plus you'd mentioned 3,000 straight off the top,
right,
worth of animals.
Right, right.
Plus your lost time. So
right,
we're talking
my lost time. And
$4,000 or $5,000 probably.
Yeah. For which you're being offered maybe $2,500 to $3,000 in,
right,
compensation.
Right.
One last question.
Oh.
I don't deal with livestock for a living, so I'll rely on you to tell me what you believe the long-term effects on your animals are, both from this set of attacks and from ongoing. Assume that a pack moves in and there is harassment on some kind of regularity. Some are killed. You're compensated for, perhaps. But I'm interested in, as a livestock expert, which you I'm sure are, what is the effect on the animals that are not killed?
Well, I think you're going to have a weight loss deal with just the running and stuff like that. There's going to be a lot of lambs you're not going to find because they're going to grab them and go. I mean, it's going to be in a long run, it's going to be some sizey, not just me, but the cow guys and everybody with this wolves running around. I think you're going to see more of it later on. I think it's kind of hard to determine right now what it's going to be. It's going to be new. I know we fight the cougars and the stuff and all summer long. The wolf is a different animal. It's going to be kind of hard to say right now what the loss is going to be or what it's going to cost.
Well, yeah, I wasn't to say talking financially. I just
I think it's going to be a different deal. It's, you know, because they come in at night. You're not going to be able to do much in the night. the dogs will be able to work what they can, but we don't turn all of our dogs loose during the... This is right here at the ranch. This is right there around the buildings. Right. We don't have all our dogs loose right at the time there because you've got baby lambs, you've got newborn ewes with newborn lambs, and you just don't want a bunch of dogs around there stirring them up. So we only turn like one or two dogs loose and let them run. But this is right in the enclosed, fenced-in areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. And it's, you know... It's not like the dog park. They kill the dogs. I've seen pictures of labs, you know, ripped in half. There's a reason that we had Peter and the Wolf and the Big Bad Wolf and Little Red Riding Hood. Wolves are not nice. I mean, they exist in nature, but they're not friendly and nice. They don't play with the other puppies.
Right.
Representative
Thank
Byer.
You mentioned that you have the calves, I guess, that you have that you're doctoring now. And the fact that you don't expect them to have long lifespans, or some you might not last through the summer. And at that point in time, if you do lose a lamb, can you be compensated?
They told me that if there was if I lost any more, to hang on to them, and Russ would come out and look at them, and we'd go from there. So.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming over. Sorry we're at 8 a.m. Did you come over last night?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've been over
here. Yeah, I assume so. Yeah, long drive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming over, Curtis. So, Tick and Barry and Katie, you want to join them? Welcome. Thanks for coming over.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving us our day in court. I've been quoted as saying that I've lost my constitutional rights, and I firmly believe that right now, as far as wolves are concerned. My name's Tick Moore. I live in Baker County also. You saw on the map, and I'm just over the hill from Kurt. You have a handout. I decided to go that route so that you don't have to sit here and look at slides all day. I'll try to be quick because Kurt's pretty gone through it. If you look at the first page of the handout, that wolf track was taken on our ranch approximately 3 weeks ago. This is an example of the notebook that's laid beside it. And that's, if you look to the left of the picture, those are the claw marks. So it's across the back of the paw like this. And this book is... 4.5 inches, well, probably closer to 5 inches in diameter across the back of the track. So that gives you an example of the size of the animal we're dealing with. The picture at the bottom is Carter Niemeyer and myself looking at the calf the day after the attack. And I need to back up. We were hit the night of April 17th, morning of April 18th. And we were woke from a dead sleep. I went out to investigate. I found this calf. In the dark, I didn't realize how badly he was hurt until Carter got there and Russ Morgan from ODFW, and we went out and started taking pictures and looking at tracks. The next page is a little graphic. I have to warn you. It's after the calf died, we worked for almost 24 hours trying to save him. And I'll say right now that if I knew what I knew now, and I had known that I was going to find this when we autopsied this calf, there's a .22 pistol in the, under the seat in that four-wheeler. And I would have used it when that picture was taken. Animals don't need to suffer. And you saw Kurt's animals. This one lived longer. And Kurt's got some that are still suffering. But this one lived a lot longer. And you can see the bite marks. I was told by the wolf people what a wolf will do, or wolves, they will flank a calf just like a cowboy when he puts it on the ground to brand it. And so what you have is bite marks in the flanks, bite marks over the chest. They throw it down. One of them grabs it by the neck, which is the next picture. It shows the fang marks in the calf's neck. In the next picture are the tracks taken at the attack site. It was 52 inches from center of track to center of track. And then the next picture again shows the fang marks. And if I remember right, and you can... ask Russ later, but I believe it was like 2 5/8 inches between or 2 inches between the fangs. Well, that's a long ways. And again, this is the flank. You can see the belly, and a piece of intestine hanging out, and then, of course, the chest bone. The next one gets into the meat of what I, my concerns. This picture is my grandson, one of four, that live at the ranch with us. Top left of the picture, Kurt's first picture that showed the mountaintop that came out and broke off. That's that same mountaintop. That's how close together we are. That attack site is right where my grandson is standing. The last picture is the attack site back toward my home, 400 yards or less. These wolves don't fear people. And the bottom line of my testimony today is if a cougar attacks my animals or my way of life or my real estate, I have a tool. If a bear comes down, threatens my family, threatens my livestock, I have a tool. A coyote, a wild dog, a wolf comes down. If I shoot that wolf, I'm going to jail for a year and I'm going to fork out $100,000. And that is not right. That I cannot, and I appreciate what you said. You know, I feel maybe I'm preaching a little bit to the choir here, but I do not have the right to defend my family, my way of life, and my animals. And you ask any rancher that's in the room tonight or anybody in this room today that handles livestock, we care about those animals as much as we care about our family, or we wouldn't be in the business. You know, I've been on my soapbox for 2 weeks. I guess I'll get off of it and listen to questions.
I have a question.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. In looking at the pictures, are they eating or are they just playing?
I don't know how to answer that question because I was jolted wide awake. I grabbed a pair of Levi's and my slippers and got in my pickup and went out there because I knew something was my cattle. The way the cows were carrying on, the calves were bellowing. And as I left the house, I heard this calf. And I don't know if any of you have ever been around a branding or any kind of a cattle operation, but when you get a hold of a calf with a rope or a bite hand, they beller. I mean, they carry on. This calf was going like that, and all of a sudden it was muffled, which told me something had it by the throat. So I, you know, my first thought was dogs until I started out there, and I went, wait a minute, Kurt got hit by wolves. But I took my diesel pickup and probably frightened them away. So I, you know, to answer your question, I don't know whether I frightened them away before they had a chance to kill and eat, okay, or if they just came down there, hey, looky here, we got some calves we can chase. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't really give you a one way or the other. My learning curve on wolves is like this right now. You know, 2 weeks ago, I knew what a wolf was. And I told somebody yesterday, there's an old adage, if you never heard a rattlesnake, when you hear one, you know what it is. Well, that night, we heard a wolf, and I had never heard a wolf before in my life. And I guarantee you, you hear a wolf, you know what it sounds like. There was no doubt. My wife said, listen to that, and we could hear him howling in the distance. I may have split the two up. When I drove out there, one may have gone high, one may have gone low, and they were, I don't know, I'm not the expert, but they were howling back and forth, and it's a sound that, again, just like a rattlesnake, till you hear it, you won't know that you've heard a wolf, but when you hear it, you will know you heard a wolf.
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Moore, I don't think we've ever met, but in my prior life, I wore a blue uniform, said Oregon State Police on the truck. Got to know a lot of farmers and ranchers. I have a tree farm, have cattle on it. I can guarantee what I'm going to do. I'm going to shoot the son of a bitch.
Thank you.
Period. And anybody who's got a brain, one's going to do the same at every opportunity. It doesn't matter if you're talking about wolves, if you're talking about mergansers, if you're talking about sea lions. Anything that the federal government touches regarding natural resources goes to hell in a handbasket. The less our federal representatives and senators have to do with natural resources, the better off we are, because there's no common sense. It gets tied up in emotionalism. We remove these animals for a reason. And we do actually have a wolf, by the way, in Curry County, but it's a very small population that's been stable in a very remote area. But if they come, I can guarantee you what my people are going to do, my farmers, my ranchers. I received some time back a formula on a poison ball you can make that'll kill every damn one of them. I could go buy that stuff anywhere and put it out. Do you want to do that? No. Do I? No, because it affects raccoons and other things that shouldn't be. But the lunacy that we've got to with our federal laws is something that somehow has got to be addressed. And simple compensation in itself, dollars, is not going to do it. Your way of life, the things that we want, your children, I've got 17 grandkids. I want to hand my tree farm over to them. It would be a good stewardship of that land, being respectful for the wildlife. We provide, specifically manage it for wildlife habitat, just like you guys do. Take care of the water courses for salmon and steelhead. But yet, government finds itself saying it has the authority to limit how I can protect that and impose a penalty for killing one of these critters more than if you went out and shot a human being. There's no common sense what we're doing, and I don't blame anybody that takes it into their own hands because the government has failed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for coming. I wish you luck. You heard what I had said earlier, but Mr. Chair, I just breathed a heavy sigh of relief when the good representative to my left clarified just which son of a bitch he was going to shoot.
Well, I'd like to say in response Please. To yeah. this question that you could talk about any group you want to, and there's the zealots to the right, the zealots to the left, and the ones in the middle. And there are members of the ag community that will sit here before you and say the only good wolf is a dead wolf. That's not gonna work anymore. But what we need the tools to manage the wolves so that I can protect what I have, but the wolves can exist. And, I'm not the sharpest tack in the box, but there's got to be a way to do that. And right now it seems to me that nobody is willing to come to the middle. And, I don't want to kill them all. I could. And I agree with you 100%. The day a wolf backs one of my grandchildren in a corner, you'll read about Tick Moore up at Sheridan in the federal penitentiary, because I won't bat an eyelash.
Amen.
I'll cap that, excuse me, son of a bitch, on the spot.
I have a feeling the jury will understand, too.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, it'll be a Baker County jury.
Thank you, honey. Back on my phone.
Katie, Barry, whoever wants to go first.
Wait, Katie.
For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I just want to back up maybe a little bit and give some background on wolves in Oregon. In 2004, ODF&W worked through a wolf management plan that had several stakeholders at the table. That plan was adopted by the commission in 2005. However, there were a few pieces in that wolf conservation and management plan that needed the Oregon legislature to act on. And there has been legislation every session since 2005, three sessions, that would have given Oregon ranchers and farmers tools to protect their livestock. And not in an extreme way that if you see a wolf on your property, you can shoot it. But no, they would allow just, if it's attacking your livestock, you could step in and take care of that situation. You might already have damage, but you could still stop it from continuing. And even this session, this committee would not hold a hearing on the bill before the deadline, even though we had Jacobs with their damage. And we're frustrated today in the livestock community because we're having this action coming forward. We've been telling the Oregon legislature this is going to happen. We've been having wolf hearings every single session that I've been in the building for five sessions on the wolf in the ag committees, and we have not been able to get action. And it's frustrating for Baker County, it's frustrating for Wallowa County, and statewide. On May 4th, the wolf potentially will be coming off the Federal Endangered Species Act. The Defenders Wildlife Compensation Program goes away at that time. But we still have the State Endangered Species Act to live with. And it does not allow a rancher to take a wolf that is chasing or attacking their livestock without a permit. And that's really what we're asking for. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Well, I'll make a comment. Farm Bureau made zero requests for a hearing for this bill. Now, the cattlemen talked to me about it, and we had plenty of conversations about whether to have a public hearing or not, short of the deadline. This isn't a question, Katie.
No, I'd like to respond,
Representative Quinn. No, this is not a question. I'm going to finish my statement first. And we'll have the cattlemen up here to talk about it. There is a vehicle that will be arriving from the Senate to talk about this. There was no point in holding a public hearing on a bill when it's impossible to move that bill to the Senate and have a hearing. So you're welcome to make whatever comments you like. It's your right. But I would encourage you to talk with people who actually have spoken with me firsthand about the strategy involved in trying to deal with the Wolf Bill. And coming up in front of the committee and maligning the fact that we haven't held a hearing on a bill, this is a hearing on the topic. That was all that was asked for by the Jacobs and by the cattlemen, and I've got emails asking for a hearing. This is it. Doesn't mean it's dead for this session, but because you decided to come and talk about it in public, now we're going to have Senator Dingfelder wanting to understand what vehicle she sent over here inadvertently.
Representative Klim, I would like to respond because the Monday after the Jacobs had the loss and I got calls from our Baker County president, I pulled you off the floor, notified you of the
hearing deadline had passed already, Katie.
It had not.
Yes, it had. Thank you.
I pulled you off the floor and asked for a hearing.
Thank you very much. A hearing is different. The work session already had to be scheduled. The work session had to be scheduled the week before.
I asked you on April 13th.
You're welcome to dispute me in public all you like. I know that if you have anything in writing that you want to show me, because I have emails from the cattlemen and the family asking for a hearing. It was after the deadline. This is the hearing. Barry?
For the record, my name is Barry Bichoux. I'm the elected president of the Oregon Farm Bureau. I farm near Boring, Oregon. Do a lot of variety of things, including a handful of sheep, which many of them were killed by neighborhood dogs and coyotes. I did shoot them. I'd like to start by thanking Representative Schaffler and Representative Krieger for making me feel so welcome. I think that their attitude to this is certainly reflective in most of our members, and we appreciate your hardcore approach on this, because somebody's got to step up to the plate on this and give us some answers, give us some tools. I would like, with respect to Vice Chairs and Representative Schaffer, I think I have an answer for the lack of connection the public has. Perhaps maybe we ought to establish a wolf pack in Tom McCall's waterfront park so people can really see the things that wolves can do for the public and, more importantly, to the public and their pets and their children. We are here today to look for a solution. Despite the discussion we just held, there's never been any doubt about Farm Bureau's position on this particular action. We want to be able to take wolves that are destroying our members' livestock. Destroying, chasing, harassing, those are all important and critical pieces of a common-sense approach to this particular problem. Once again, private landowners have had to foot the bill for management of public resources, and frankly, we're tired of it. These are introduced wolves. They are not here normally. We have to deal with them. I hope like hell they never get to your area, Representative Roblin, because you're going to find the same problems with your constituents that these fine gentlemen and all of you folks that have to deal with on a daily basis. We're the ones that get the phone calls. We're the ones that want to know why we're not doing something about it. And we're here today to work collaboratively with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. We've burned up a lot of phone time between the two organizations long before the tragedy that happened to the Jacobs and Tick Moore. And we will continue probably long after to come before you to try and figure out some common sense approach to this. I will have to agree with Tick. There's always going to have to be a moderate ground when you have emotion running the process. And there is a lot of emotion around this issue. So somewhere along the line, you have to represent and look after. Good public policy protects private landowners. Good public policy protects the ability of livestock producers to maintain and manage a productive entity, which is a critical piece of Eastern Oregon's economy. And, you know, frankly, this committee probably understands the value of agriculture better than anyone else. So, you know, despite whatever's happened here in the last few minutes, those pictures speak better than anything this old boy can talk about. And the pictures that this fine gentleman here has come to you with, and I know there's a couple of other livestock producers that are going to tell you exactly the same story. So with that in mind, I would like to make a comment, and with all due respect, Representative Van Orman, I'm sure you meant this in a very good way. From our perspective, it really doesn't make any difference if they're eating or playing. The fact is they're doing, and I'm not suggesting you were saying that. I just wanted to make clear for the record, it makes absolutely no difference to us and to the livestock owner. We haven't got the time or the ability to make that determination except through the scope of a rifle. Representative Roman. Sorry. I guess
I should. This just took over. Remember.
I won't
be on the sunny day.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you also. I guess I have two concerns, having been through the last three sessions of wolf hearings. I'm not convinced that having the right to... I am fully in favor of having the right to protect your animals when they're in the act. I have no problem. Shoot them, whatever, in the act. The problem is, wolves, unlike some of these other predators, when they attack and when they do stuff, you're hardly ever around. I mean, they are animals that... I mean, I would rather have the ability, if you can track the animal back, you can take him, because if they've taken it once, they're going to come back and do it again. I just feel that's pretty consistently true. That's even a harder standard to get to, and getting to the other standard, I don't know that's going to help us any. It might make us feel a little better, but I don't know how many people have ever had the ability, while a taking was going on, to take the wolf. Were you that close?
Had that opportunity.
Okay, that makes me feel better, because I most of the testimony we'd had before was that the animal was usually off and gone before the people ever got to deal with it, and that was always a frustration of mine, because and I could never understand why the defenders would even tell you there's no hardly any history of that. And I said, well, if there's no history, why aren't we doing it then? Because obviously you aren't going to lose anything if it's not going to happen. So it makes me feel a little bit better that there actually have been cases when you actually could take while in the act. And I guess the other thing is that, in respect to Van Orman's, in having looked at this a number of times, wolves are different than a lot of other predators. They do play. They go around and kill as many as they can before they eat. Most animals kill and eat what they have killed. Wolves tend to get in a fury when there's a lot of animals around and bite and do some other kinds of stuff. And the last one I want to say is, so far we've only seen small animals. There's a good film of a buffalo full-grown being taken down by a pack of wolves, and they're pretty remarkable hunting animals. So, with that, any comments with regard to...
Chair Clem, Representative Roblin, I'd just like to respond. I think I don't want any mistake here. Our thoughts about a bill are a bill we think we can get passed, but I don't think anybody has characterized our position any more clearly than Representative Krueger and Representative Schaffler. I mean, if we could have the bill that Representative Schaffler and Representative Krueger could collaboratively write, it would look a whole lot different than probably what we're going to end up with. I don't want any mischaracterization of what I'm saying. We don't believe they belong here.
And we're going to tax bicycles in that bill, too.
You're going to have a hard time getting his bill through.
I like your style.
Representative Krueger? Yeah, Mr. Chair. We've heard about that disconnect regarding this issue. But there's a disconnect from the urban areas throughout the state, not only on this issue, but a whole host of issues. This is just one of them. They don't understand our problem that Representative Robin and I have with our rural schools and declining enrollment. It goes on and on. And I don't know how you educate those people. Specifically, when I think it was Major 18, the anti-trapping and running bears and cougars with dogs, I was so frustrated. And I've been with the state police 28 years. I understood like there's a balance out there. And that kept us from having that balance. And I knew that was going to get worse. Well, it got worse. And I've had $400,000 with the loss of my tree farm from bears peeling trees. So guess what critter I take care of whenever the opportunity. And I don't worry about a tag. I don't worry about the time of day. I don't worry about a season. And I'm a retired state policeman that work game. What is wrong with society that we force honest, good people to that because we don't have common sense policies? And when we were thinking about that, I was talking to some of the other natural resource people. I said, I've got a live trap. I just...
I need to trap a bear, take it to Portland, turn it loose about 8 o'clock on Salmon and Broadway, and get it going the wrong way on the street, and just sit down with a video and video this, and just see how those people react having in their front yard on the driveway going up to where they go to work, what I put up with every day. I may do that. So if you ever see a bear in Portland, you could just bet who turned it loose. But you play hell proving it.
Where's that Van Orman?
Thank you, Chair Clem. Well, I would like to say I was basically curious, Jerry. I was just curious about the behavior. But I would, and I also want to say that I am grieving. Coyote ate my kitty last fall. So, and I live up above Hood River, up above the freeway about 3 miles, and there's a cluster of houses. So we have coyotes in our community. So it's not a wolf, but they're busy eating our cats.
You bet.
Yes. Here we have still Rod Childers, Oregon Cattleman, and the department.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Rod?
Eat them up, Rod.
Chair Clem and committee members, Jim Welsh, lobbyist for Oregon Cattlemen Association. Just want to thank you for having this hearing and always having an open door on this subject, because you and I did spend some time talking, and yes, I was there asking for a hearing on our bill and talking about it, and I was very pleased when you said you'd give us this hearing. And then the incident occurred. I think it's much more important that you listen to Rod Childers. I just want you to know that he is our expert on this issue, because he's the Oregon Cattlemen's Wolf Committee Chair. And he's comes from Eastern Oregon, and I think you'll be interested in hearing about him. Now, the piece that we provided you is intended to be educational. There's some good, I think, information here that refers, of course, to the wolf. I'll preface some things possibly later. And a little bit about my family history and a little bit of their experience in another state with a wolf, too. But let's listen to Rod Childers. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and for you to hold this hearing and things. The guys before me have said a lot of what needed to be said here, and I think a lot goes back. What I'd like to address some here is this
Rod,
Oregon...
Rod, we just need you to state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm Rod Childers from Wallowa County, and I am the Oregon Cattlemen's Wolf Committee Chair. I don't claim to be an expert. Let's get that out here first and think so. I'm learning like everybody else with this, so... But I do think that this Oregon Wolf Plan, where with the discussion that's already happened and things here today, we do realize that May 4th potentially this could come off the federal ESA and become Oregon's problem and things, and not have anybody else. And so we do have the Oregon Wolf Plan. It was recognized when that was done. There was three legislative concepts that needed to happen. One was it needed to go to a game mammal. It needed to, there was compensation verbiage that was talked about in the legislature, and also the right to protect our livestock when they were attacking and chasing. Right now, I know that through Senate Bill 391, you have the game mammal deal is coming down to the House, if I'm understanding it right. And, we chose not. In the past, this compensation was written into some of these bills. In our House Bill 3383 that we had, we chose not to go with compensation right now. We understand we would like to have it. We want you guys to understand that, and ladies, but at the same time, we realize the economic times that we're in here. And so we're looking for what we can try to get that will help our producers in the field. But, we kind of start taking baby steps here to see what we can get done and things with it. But we do need the right to protect our livestock. And putting attacking and chasing and harassing in these bills is what covers the definitions for people that so that they can do it before you have to come here and look at more pictures of what Kurt Jacobs just showed you and things. I don't want to go through that. I run cattle. I don't run sheep. But at the same time, it's happened to the cattlemen also with tick. All we got to do is look across to the east here. Look into Idaho and Montana and Wyoming, and see what's already happened. We don't need to start from scratch here. We've got what we're asking in this bill, what we'd like to have in that bill, is the same language that Idaho has. And if you go to the Federal Register and you look in with the Endangered Species Act, what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says, same thing. Things you get chasing, harassing. They do put molesting and a lot of more words in there. But if we can just have attacking, chasing, and harassing and things, we can go a long ways to help satisfy the producers here. We realize the wolf's going to be here, but we can't stop that. Wish we could, but we've got to try to figure out how we can live with that and things. I would like to address a couple of questions that you guys asked, some of the first ones here, and Representative Van Orman, you asked about can dogs be used on the cattle, and they can be as long as when we're in calving, if you're not running out. But like in our country where I'm at, I run cattle out 40 miles from town. I run on a public lands on a permit and things. And the idea when you turn cattle out in the sun, you're trying to scatter them out so the less impact you have on any one piece of ground.
Okay.
And so, there's no way that guard dogs will work in those kind of areas. Like, say, in the wintertime and things like that, or when you're calving, you bring them in on calving grounds, and you could it possibly would help. But out in that open country, and we're from 2,200 feet elevation up over 5,000, and it's straight up and down. Eastern Oregon, I'm in the Joseph Creek Canyon country out north of Enterprise, and it's big, rough country, and my opportunity out there to catch a wolf in the act of killing is very low, I think. But at the same time, we need that, at least the legislature needs to pass those kind of things to show that there is common sense in here, and that you do care about what's happening, whether it's in Eastern Oregon or Western Oregon. It doesn't matter. We're all Oregonians here. And we've got to make this thing work together. And so on that one, I mean, they can be, but it's just in the right circumstances. You asked, Representative Wingard asked on impacts to livestock other than death, and that's been covered a little bit here. But the one thing there is that, again, you get out there in that country and they get run around, they get off in a piece of country, we might not find them for a few days. We're not gonna know that they're hurt or that they've been hit. A lot of times, confirmed kills can be, in the other states, as the statistics show, that it's one out of six that are actually, that are documented and verified that it was. So when you talk about monetary impact and things like that, if I get paid for one and I've lost five others and things, that ain't going to work very good. I can't make a living that way. And so I think that we need to recognize it. Anytime that we have an opportunity to get one, when we do see it in the act of chasing or attacking our livestock, we need to be able to take that. And in the other states, again, there's less than 100 wolves that have been taken by ranchers and things. Most of it, you come in, you call, you'd have ODF&W, you'd have Wildlife Services come in and do that and things. So, and I think that covers about what I wanted to. I think mostly everything else has been addressed and things with it. So I would take some questions if you.
Questions for these folks?
Not much more to say. It's been an hour,
okay.
20 minutes in here.
And we're going to have the department come up, Russ Morgan and Ron Anglin, so there may be a little bit more. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Sir.
Good morning, Chair Klim, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. With me this morning is Russ Morgan. He's our wolf coordinator located out of La Grande and has been very involved in the incidents that have occurred out in the Baker Valley here in the last couple of weeks. The testimony that we've prepared for you this morning is intended to be very high level, just kind of outline some of the things we can and can't do. Some questions that have come up that I think I'd like to address first is there were comments made on being able to take wolves caught in the act, chasing, biting, harassing. There's more flexibility currently allowed in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming because the wolves, when they were reintroduced there, were granted an experimental population status, which under the federal ESA grants more flexibility in dealing with any problems that would occur. Under the straight federal ESA, it's more restrictive language. Here in Oregon, wolves are still federally listed, and the federal government does still have primary responsibility for dealing with wolves, problem wolves, and managing the populations. There is a proposal that if continues to move forward, that as of May 4th, they would be federally delisted east of Highway 395, essentially, and fall under the state's purview and the state ESA east of that line as of May 4th, May 5th. The rest of Oregon would still remain federally listed under the full federal ESA. What that means then is the wolf management plan that you've heard about would really kick in, and we would have the primary responsibility for any management of wolves in that federally delisted portion of the state. The plan that the commission adopted in 2005 was intended to set the stage so that knowing wolves were going to come here from Idaho, that we couldn't stop them, set the stage so that we could get to the point where we could state delist wolves and that we would have the maximum flexibility possible as an agency to be able to work with landowners in dealing with problem animals. And the plan, as identified in the cattleman's testimony, does kind of break management up into three different phases, and there's increasing levels of flexibility in dealing with damage in each of those phases. There is the ability for landowners to take wolves in phases one and two as long as they do have a permit from the department. After we reach four breeding pairs within eastern Oregon, we would be able to move forward with the delisting of wolves. We'd have to have four breeding pairs for 3 years or more and go through that confirmation process. So the plan was set up in such a way that we could get to the point where we could have a delisting. As I said, as you move through the phases, you end up with more wolves. The plan is designed to grant greater and greater flexibility. The department does have statutory responsibility under the state ESA to conserve species that are listed under the state ESA. Our goal is to have them delisted. We don't like to have species listed. We don't like the constraints that are placed on us and are placed on landowners and the public when you have either a federal or a state listing. I think that what also attached to the testimony there is in attachment one, there's a brief summary of the events that occurred the last couple of weeks out in the Baker Valley. Now, I think that from the department's perspective, we want to make it very clear these landowners have done nothing wrong. Mr. Jacobs, in how they've kept their sheep, those are the types of things that you would advise people to do. They're doing the right types of things, and they had wolf depredation, which is what we all expected would occur at some point in time once we ended up with wolves here in the state. With that, Mr. Chair, I think it'd probably be best if just conclude our testimony and just open it up for questions. I will say that the department did run a bill in the two previous sessions. We did run our own bill on trying to grant us more flexibility within the statute, and unfortunately, we couldn't get all the parties in agreement. You know, we worked quite closely with Representative Roblin when he was chair and with Representative Patty Smith when she was chair to try and come to agreement on the bill and the language of the bill, and unfortunately we couldn't get all the parties into agreement on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And that's not extraordinarily different from the situation we're in. The requests for hearings on bills that don't have any chance were made. Then the decision on whether to, not by some parties in time, but by other parties way long before time, same situation as my good friend experience, which is a certain imminent demise in other chambers without sign-off. And there are other strategies to deal with that that Senator Boquist and I have talked about a lot, and session's not over. But they were endangered today. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the question, you know, we've talked about permits here a lot over the last little while, you know, so that people can go and take a cougar permits, all those kind of things. What's it take to get a permit with respect to a wolf under our endangered species step? Because it's not, you can't just go down and buy a permit, correct?
Chair Klim, Representative Roblin, I'll let Russ deal with that because he's our on-the-ground person, and he's the one that would be working with the landowners on it.
Chair Klim, Representative Roblin, for the record, my name is Russ Morgan. I'm the Oregon Wolf Coordinator for ODFW. To answer your question on under what circumstances a permit would be issued, Oregon Administrative Rule is already set in place for the wolf plan, and it clearly states that there has to be a confirmed depredation, not suspected, but confirmed depredation, that measures are taken to try to prevent that. Doesn't mean that all those measures have to be exhausted. It just means that we need to show that we're trying to prevent further depredations. There's some other requirements, such as reporting requirements in 24 hours. So there is a for the ability to be issued a landowner be issued a caught in the act of attacking permit, that process is already in place.
So follow up. Have those conditions been met in these situations so far, so that those landowners could get a permit?
Well, Representative Roblin, Chair Klim, the actions that have taken place on the ground certainly would fall into line with all of those criteria, yes. And I will reaffirm these folks out here on the ground have been considering the circumstances, have been very, very pleasant to work with. They've done everything that we have asked and recommended and worked with us very closely. So, yes. However, it's a little bit of an apples and oranges because right now, today, there is no option to issue that permit. May 4th, that could change.
And follow up?
Follow up.
So as of, say the federal delists on May 4th, would the fact that these have already happened allow them to get permits after May 4th, in your opinion?
Representative Roblin, Chair Klim. As I stated before, all of those specific requirements have been met. Now, clearly, there have not been any further depredations. So I think, you know, as each day goes by, we'll continue on with this process out in the field. And as each day goes by, we have to continually assess that. If we're seeing activity, we do have a history now on these two particular ranches of depredation by a pair of wolves. And as time goes by, I think we just have to continually make that assessment. Yeah.
Follow up. So do for either any of these people to get a permit or the landowner adjacent to them, mm-hmm. there has to be another event on their own property to get a permit?
Representative Roblin, no, not necessarily. The rule does apply to the affected landowner that has been the recipient of depredation, adjacent landowners. We've also reviewed that, and area landowners in the immediate area. Those adjacent landowners, if I understand your question, do not need to have depredation in order for this to... the consequence of depredation has already occurred.
Okay. and yeah. I think my final.
Yes.
The issue of protection of family or grandkids and that kind of stuff, that is okay in any circumstance. Is that not correct? Do they need a permit if they're being attacked in the house?
Chair Clem, Representative Roblin, we went through this quite extensively during the Wolf Management Plan with our attorneys, and you know it's uncertain to know what the courts would decide, but there are laws on the books that state that people do have a right to defend themselves, okay. And you know the best advice that our attorneys could give us is that they didn't feel that under those kind of circumstances that the courts would penalize them.
And this is not really, this is my final statement.
Yes.
I mean, because I did know the answer to these questions, most of them, but the frustrating part to me is that when we go back to what Representative Krieger said about common sense, I mean, the attorneys have concerns whether or not there is legal authority to shoot an animal that's trying to kill you. I mean, that leads me to feel that there is a little bit of a problem with regard to this, because I can, as Representative Schaffer pointed out earlier, I can defend myself against another human being that was hurting me, and legally, and there's really no legal, that's pretty clear that it's, if they're threatening or have a bodily harm with another weapon, you can kill them. I tend to believe that the wolf by its nature is a weapon. Therefore, the fact that there is doubt makes me rather concerned, actually.
Representative Byers?
Thank you, Chair Clem, and thank you, Representative Gilliam. For the question I wanted to ask was very ably asked by Representative Roblin, and probably better than I could have asked. I guess more of a comment now, in that based on the fact that you have introduced legislation in the past to try to give yourself just a little more room to deal with this issue. I understand that this is a policy decision, I guess, at some point, but I mean, the department must recognize that this is not the way to run an agency or to manage wildlife. And I mean, it's just frustrating to me to listen to this. I started in 03 in this committee, 05 in this committee. I missed 07, and I'm back. And the situation has just gradually gotten worse and worse over that period of time. And this doesn't work, and we need to do something about it.
The department didn't introduce a bill this year, did they?
Chair Clem, no, we did not introduce a bill this year. We failed after our two previous failed attempts and our inability to get everybody to the table and come up with the solutions that we were tired and we were going to let this session ride, and we did not introduce a bill.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask a little bit about your authority with or without legislation and whatever strategies may or may not be happening. Within what you can do, I was not surprised about the testimony from our friends from Eastern Oregon that you guys had jumped in, and the compliments to Mr. Morgan. So I appreciate what you're doing under what you've got to do. But my question is, as I look at phase 1, 2, and 3, it's part of the plan, and to me, newcomer to the issue, the plan is working great until wolves come. And what is it you can do within your authority to step this up? I mean, I look at, for instance, phase 2, when there have been at least 2 confirmed depredations. Okay, why can't we say when there's been 1 that we have? That's the gist of what I'm trying to get at. What can we do before we get to legislation to enhance it by rule if we've got a problem?
Chair Clem, Representative Gilliam, the plan was about an 18-month effort of the department with a hired facilitator and all of the interested parties represented at the table. And the plan, as the commission adopted, is pretty much what that group recommended to us. So, you know, we take those recommendations very seriously when we pull together that kind of a work group and they make those kind of recommendations to us. I guess, you know, from a department standpoint, at this point in time, you know, this is as bad as it is, and I don't want to make light of how bad it is. You know, I know TIC in particular. We've worked with TIC quite a bit over the years on our access and habitat board. I don't know Mr. Jacobs, but I have dealt with landowners that have lost livestock, and it is not a pretty or a nice event. And, you know, so I don't want to make light of that, but this is the first confirmed event that we have had in the state, and to rush in and change the rules based on that, or change the wolf plan based on that, when we really haven't had a chance to implement the wolf plan and make sure that, you know, any changes we make make sense, and we take that all into account. So the commission certainly does have the ability to make changes. We as an agency, we have no hesitation at all, if it's not making sense, to look at revisions. We just need to work it through. You know, Russ, he's been sleeping on site out there as this has been going on, and he is our only person, by the way, that we have to deal with wolves.
Of
course. And, you know, the other compounding factor for us is that as wolves get delisted federally, we would want to be using Wildlife Services at a time when we're looking at reductions in Wildlife Services budgets, both at the state and the potentially the county levels, and being able to use them to help deal with these depredations. Our intent is to deal with them. We're going probably through a similar process to what we went through with cougars way back when they were listed as a game mammal and very restrictive regulations to begin with. And as the population grew, we relaxed and liberalized everything within the law and within rule.
Well, one follow-up, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I just would say that I appreciate that answer, and I know it's not easy, and there is a lot of history, and I don't like to just come in and throw out a task force, but you're well aware of this. I think the pressure's on, and by your own words, you feel in the last two sessions, you, the department, I'm saying, feel like we need some legislation, some changes, and there's pressure in this room that we're very sensitive to. And this is not news to you, but I just want to say I'm eager to move ahead by rule or by law to do something about the situation.
Further questions? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Just to make sure everybody, I know this chair wants to do something about it, and probably it's closer to Representative Krieger in my position than people know. Probably a lot closer, because he hunts, and I quit hunting when I was 17 years old. I still fish. But, you know, it says here the defender, our good friends at the Defenders of Wildlife, no cause for panic. Well, just now we just had a conversation questioning. There's some legal question about whether or not a human being who is attacked would have the ability to kill, dispatch these animals accordingly. Now, that boggles my mind. It says here, no time for panic. Imagine if it were a child. Would we say, let's not panic, let's just calm down, it's only one child? Would we do that? Obviously not. It's just horrible to even consider the possibility that someone may be taken to court over killing an animal that is attacking them or theirs. It's unbelievable to even have the conversation, yet we're having it. I really think, you know, I will, and I think it was 1996, the bear, cougar, dog ban. I voted for that. I made a mistake. I remember my foreman saying, Mike, don't do that. We're going to be overrun with these animals. And he was exactly right. You know what? I didn't know what I know now. I wish I had. But, you know, I don't think the people that voted for that know what we know now either. And I know one thing. These pictures tell us everything we need to know. Everything we need to know. And I've admitted that in public before anyway, so it's not a secret. But, you know, it's just, we've come to a point where we have to do something. And I know the department, I'm not blaming the department. You're doing what you got, what we tell you to do, essentially, is what we're telling you to do. But I think the time's long since passed to finally do something about this. And I'll just shut up because I know the time is late. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your patience today.
Trying.
You're holding in there?
I'm trying.
Only 20 more minutes.
Gentlemen, I'm glad that you're up here because I have a couple of questions about how this whole process works and what's been going on in other states. Right. First of all, I want to understand, there seems to be pretty general agreement that federal restrictions tend to be more severe than state restrictions. I think some of the reason why our friends in the wildlife protection community seek out federal action is because they believe that they will get more severe restrictions when they do that. That being generally acknowledged, and I'm kind of new to this subject, is it my understanding that when the federal delisting occurs on the east side of the state, that we will still have state restrictions that will make it more severe than what the federal restrictions had been? And if the answer is yes, I'd like to understand on why on earth that could possibly be the case.
Chair Clam, Representative Wingard. First off, you have two different ESAs in play. One is the federal ESA and the other is the state ESA.
I understand.
Under the federal ESA, there are very strict restrictions on take. However, there is a clause within the federal ESA that if you are trying to lead to a recovery of a species, you can do an experimental population recovery effort. And they have some special tools within the experimental population designation that actually give them some greater flexibility than they do under the straight federal ESA. And in that, and in the efforts that were made to reintroduce wolves into those three Rocky Mountain states, they granted greater flexibility in dealing with livestock damage and depredation, the Cottony Act, chasing, harassing type thing, than what is currently or normally available under the straight federal ESA. For example, spotted owls, federally listed, you can't do any of those things. You know, the harassment, all that falls into the take category. So when they're federally delisted, well, in Eastern Oregon, the feds have told us that they're not treating the Eastern Oregon population, if I remember correctly, as the experimental population. They're treating it as the straight federal T&E species population. And that's because Oregon was not part of the original experimental population release. So the federal rule is actually very restrictive for Eastern Oregon, and they're still calling the shots. Well, it's restrictive for all of Oregon, and they're still calling the shots. So the federal law right now is essentially the same as ours. And when the federal law goes away for that portion of Eastern Oregon and the state ESA still kicks in or would kick in at that point in time, we actually do have flexibility to where we will allow take under the state ESA with the use of a permit.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just because we're running out of time, assume we did not have an Oregon ESA on this issue or we didn't have the wolves listed. If the feds delisted in next month, what would the situation be in Eastern Oregon under those conditions?
If we had no state ESA or they were not on the state ESA and the feds delisted for Oregon, then they would have no protection at all.
This is my question. Is if the feds intend or might next month delist these wolves in Oregon, I'm trying to understand the rationale for why the state should have restrictions in place. The federal ESA is an extremely restrictive law. I have some experience with that. And if they have made the decision to delist the wolf, I am at a loss to understand why we would have state policy that would make it difficult for them to be treated as other wildlife is in the state.
Chair Clem, Representative Wingard, remember that if they do a delisting, it would only be for that portion of the state that's immediately adjacent to Idaho. And what they have told us, if they, by including that, it is based on the fact that Oregon does have a wolf management plan that would lead to a state delisting.
So it's because of what the protections we have.
If we did not have this, my guess is that they would make absolutely no effort to do any delisting in Oregon at this time.
Thank you. One other question.
Yeah, I've just got one more person over here.
I'd like to have, well, this is probably a large conversation, so maybe but I'd like to have an understanding. One of the things that would have been nice in this hearing is to understand some of these other states are ahead of us in this process as far as how many wolves they have and how their ranchers are interacting with them. And I'd like to have an understanding of, you know, what the predation levels are and how people are being compensated. I'm sure there's probably a large dissatisfaction with that compensation. And I think we could learn a lot from, as a panel, from getting information on what's going on in some of these other states that are obviously much further ahead in this process.
Chair Clem, Representative Wingard, we'll dust off some of the information that we provided to previous committees. It has that information in it, and we can update that. Our previous bills did include compensation plan in it. So we'll dust that off and provide it to the committee.
I appreciate it.
Mr. Troffler.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this species is multiplying rather dramatically. It's getting larger. It's clear evidence by what Idaho's done. My wife and I were in Banff at Lake Louise last fall. And while up there, up at the top of the ski lift, they have this interpretive center. There was no cell. You just get people right up there, and you see bears grazing, such a. And they showed they had a collared wolf up in this, clear up there in Canada. And they showed how it came down into Montana, down into Idaho. In this case, it went crossed over into Washington, back up into British Columbia, and then over to Alberta. I mean, these animals know, they do not recognize geopolitical boundaries. And this idea of, well, we're going to draw a line right here in Oregon, and everything over here is treated one way. What if your ranch is just on this side of that line? And I'm not blaming you, Mr. Anglin. I'm just putting this out there just to vent my frustration. It's ridiculous. Our Endangered Species Act, in my humble opinion, should just reflect what the federal government does and leave it at that. We don't need all the geniuses in this building figuring out how many wolves can dance on the head of a pin. We need to have some common sense put in. I'm not blaming you. I'm just talking to you because you're sitting right there with your nice wolf print tie on.
This is actually cougar.
Oh, cougar print tie. Hey, thank you for clarifying
in,
that.
And Chair Clem, we did recognize that exact fact on where that line was drawn, and we submitted some fairly strong comments to the service on their proposed delisting, objecting to where that line was drawn, and they put it there anyway.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. With that, my final comments are, I did not vote for Measure 18, fortunately. I was not so far out of Coos, about 4 years out of Coos Bay at the point that I still remembered a couple things on what I thought would happen. I remember debating, I was married to my wife, who has taught me much, and most of which was how to go set gopher traps out in the orchard. And I was fairly concerned about the provisions. It also dealt with whether we could trap the gophers that were killing all of our trees. And talking with some of the same people who are still here today about that on the phone and whether I was going to vote for this thing or not. And I'm happy to take full responsibility for the strategic course that this issue will hopefully still be able to have this session. The bill that that was presented to us doesn't contain things like let's make it a game mammal. I mean, there are some options that were used on cougars that are pretty wise, I think, on wolves. So there are other courses, as I said, the session's not over yet, and this is an issue that's important to agricultural producers, and that's what this committee is here for, and we're going to do our best to see what we can get done. With that, I'm going to adjourn the committee. Thank you for coming over.